Hello, Damien Carrick with you. Welcome to the Law Report Summer Series. Today, in the second of our special Kimberley series, which was first broadcast last May, travel with me to Fitzroy Crossing, an Indigenous town about 400 kilometres east of Broome. With a population that fluctuates between 2,000 and 4,000 people, depending on the season, it nestles close to the banks of the very beautiful Fitzroy River. It's also a place with huge problems, especially around alcohol and violence. But the locals, particularly the women, are resilient and resourceful, and they've taken bold steps to tackle alcohol abuse. About 7 years ago, the residents decided to limit the sale of takeaway alcohol. Light beer can be bought, but anything stronger has to be consumed on the premises.
Senior Sergeant Andrew Stevens, we're out here in the car park of the Fitzroy Crossing Police Station. Can you describe for me, there's sort of a gutter with a metal roof on it. It's about the width of two beer cans. What is it?
This is our purpose-built can crusher. In anticipation that we would be seizing large amounts of liquor in Fitzroy Crossing, they created this for us to make disposal of the seized liquor a little bit more easy for us.
They're about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 metre long grates, and you're about to pull one off for me. Can we see what's underneath?
Sure.
Ah, okay, and underneath it looks like you'd fit beer cans across that gate, and you put the lid back on, and what happens
then?
That's
right. When you've filled up the grate with beer cans, the lid gets placed back on. We put up a ramp at one end, and you drive a troop carrier over the top to crush the cans between the grate and the lid.
I see, and all the alcohol drains out at the bottom.
Yes, it goes into a drain which runs around the corner to a mango tree.
Is it a healthy mango tree?
Well, yes it is. It's a very happy one too.
Of course you're doing this because you're confiscating what's known as sly grog, which must occupy a good amount of your time.
We do put a lot of effort into targeting sly grog because most of the crime that occurs in Fitzroy Crossing comes from alcohol abuse. Mm. So we try to limit the inflow of alcohol here as much as possible.
And that's pursuant to the alcohol restrictions which were brought in, I think, about 6 or 7 years ago. What exactly is restricted legally?
You cannot buy takeaway liquor in Fitzroy Crossing with a strength greater than 2.7%.
So it's light beer?
Yes.
Since the restrictions were brought in on sales of takeaway alcohol, presumably this kind of sly grog or bringing in grog into town and then selling it must have become quite common.
It is very prevalent, and you can drive around town at night time and there'll be a lot of people drinking liquor which you know has been brought into town. And a fair amount of that is sold at a profit of up to 300% by people who do it as a business.
What's the penalty if you get caught?
The maximum penalty of $10,000, a minimum of two.
Can you go to jail?
No, there's no jail penalty.
Are there many prosecutions and many convictions?
Yes, we've had up to 10 successful convictions so far since April last year.
Tell me, how do you go about finding people who are doing the sly grogging?
Because Fitzroy is a remote community, everything that comes in here comes on the road, so we target the traffic coming in. At times when we think of the highest probability of people trying to come in with liquor to sell, and we stop the vehicles and search them.
Are they often hidden in pretty well-concealed places?
They do hide it. It'll be hidden in boxes on the back of utes. It'll be hidden underneath a lot of sleeping bags and clothes in the back of a car or a ute.
Is it easy to achieve a prosecution? Because I imagine that you'd have to establish beyond reasonable doubt that somebody's planning to sell it. How do you do that? As opposed to for their own personal use or maybe as a gift for their friends or family?
It comes down to our interview with the people. Our investigations are aimed at who the alcohol is meant for. If we don't get a satisfactory answer, we keep probing.
You do have a difficult job here. I believe there was an interesting case recently involving somebody who went and bought on behalf of a large group of people who all put in money, came back. I think there was a bit of change left over and he bought a meat pie, and the prosecution's allegation was that that was his profit and therefore he was selling and there was a profit there. This was a transaction as opposed to just collecting everybody's money and buying for all those individual people. I believe that fell over. The magistrate didn't like that.
There isn't a lot of guidance for us from the courts when we're doing our sly grogging prosecutions, and we've had that recent trial in Fitzroy Crossing which was of big interest for us, and it gave us a heads up how the magistrate sees such prosecutions. And he determined that for us to prove someone is sly grogging, we have to show a pecuniary benefit. We were looking at a benefit this person had gained in as much as being provided fuel to go a certain distance to pick up the liquor, and to be provided with food and foodstuffs and other benefits but we couldn't actually show the court an amount of money that he'd gained from doing that transaction, and therefore we didn't win that case.
Have there been other cases which have been successful and other cases which haven't been?
That is the only case we've had that hasn't been successful.
I understand that the community here is hotly divided between those who think the restrictions are good and the laws which support them are good and those who don't. But even over and above that divide, I understand there's a lot of issues around family loyalty, so people might not give you the evidence you need because they don't want to dob in friends or family.
That's true, and what we are trying to stop here is a trade which is occurring between people who provide a product that other people want. So it's difficult to get information on any case as to who's selling the sly grog because their market doesn't want us to stop the trade.
I've been told by other people that you can go into some houses here and it will be like walking into a grog shop.
We have searched one house in a community here that was set up as an illegal grog shop where they had large amounts of liquor in various rooms, and people would come to the door, tell them what they wanted, and the people who lived in that house would take the liquor to the front door and accept payment for it.
It was effectively a shop.
It was, yes.
Do you think that the restrictions have helped?
The liquor restrictions have definitely helped in Fitzroy Crossing, and the people from the hospital will tell you the same thing. A vast reduction in domestic violence and a great reduction in the amount of people presenting to hospital with injuries from domestic violence. It is slowly creeping up again, and that is because people are finding ways around the restrictions.
And do you know when a truck or a carload full of grog has arrived? Is that because all of a sudden a party starts?
That's right. If we have a night when people are playing up more than usual, we know that we've missed a shipment of grog coming into town.
And how many nights a week does that happen?
Quite often on a Thursday and Friday and a Saturday night.
Senior Sergeant Andrew Stevens, thank you very much for speaking to the Law Report.
You're welcome, Damien.
A short walk from the police station is the Maninwantikura Women's Resource Centre. The organisation's CEO is June Oscar. She was one of the women who helped forge the community consensus that led to the alcohol restrictions. June says 8 years ago, her community was in crisis.
2005-2006, we had 50 funerals. Many of them were preventable deaths. So it was becoming what was considered normal part of life, that people were dying in this community.
I saw one report that there were 55 deaths in 1 year, and most were alcohol related, and of those, 13 were suicides.
Yes, they were, and that was very, very concerning for us. We knew alcohol was having a devastating impact on everyone in this community, and it was clear back then that it needed to be addressed from within this community. Because for someone to external to here to the Fitzroy Valley to impose a measure, whether it's an intervention or whatever you might call it, would cause other concerns for the community. So we here in the community needed to own and drive the change that we so desperately needed. And the decision came at a women's bush meeting in 2007, where the women said, enough is enough, we need to address this.
Some people opposed this move, didn't they? Was it a tough time for you?
We knew that there would be opposition. We're a community like any other community. You're not going to find 100% agreement on an issue.
You were threatened, weren't you?
We were threatened. We were threatened by our own people saying that we are doing something that's culturally inappropriate, that we would be dealt with cultural curses, and bad things would happen to either myself or members of our family.
I understand that you were told that, well, look, if people die travelling on long road trips to get grog from other outlets, you know, hundreds of kilometres away, and they die on those roads, then there'd be cultural payback, that you'd be assaulted or killed. That was a threat.
Oh, yeah, well, that was one of the threats. The restrictions meant that people had to travel to Derby or Broome to purchase full-strength alcohol, and if they died through road accidents, then it was our fault. But, you know, clearly that's a no-brainer. If people wish to consume alcohol and get behind the wheel of a car, well, you know, that's drink driving and that's an offence.
So the restrictions were brought in about 2007. What's been the impact of those restrictions?
We saw the 85% attendance to alcohol-related injuries at emergency at the hospital drop down to 25% within the first 3 to 6 months. There was an increase in school attendance.
From something like 60 to 80%, was that right?
That's right.
That was within a very short space of time after the restrictions came in. Have those improvements maintained over time?
There were evaluations, independent evaluations conducted by the University of Notre Dame at 12 months and 2 years. So we agreed that we would leave that and conduct an evaluation in 5 years. So we're due to have the independent evaluations conducted again.
Well, bearing in mind that new research hasn't yet been published, what's your feeling here on the ground? Do you and other people who support the restrictions say it's a much better place than it was before the restrictions?
I think we need to be very clear around not just simply saying it's a better place, we've fixed all the problems, because the restrictions was never ever intended to be the silver bullet that would fix every single problem in a socially challenging environment as we live in. That must be understood. But we know, we can say without a doubt, as a result of the restrictions, there has been these positive changes in the community. Some of those changes were immediate. Maybe they lost traction after a period of time. We need to understand why that is. We need to also understand what are the new challenges.
In Fitzroy Crossing, it was never a case, as I understand it, of white people selling grog to black people, because the two pubs in the town are owned by Aboriginal organisations. And I understand that they were against the restrictions.
Well, first of all, I'm not against Aboriginal people owning and investing in economic growth of the community. There's advantages in that. And yes, the two licences in Fitzroy Crossing are owned by an Aboriginal company on behalf of the five shareholding communities. But I think businesses have a social responsibility to its shareholders and to its people and to the quality of life. And we saw that the quality of life for the shareholders were being so severely impacted by alcohol. So people were dying to keep a business alive here. The 50 deaths we had in 2005-06 were people who belonged to this community, who are part of the shareholding community of those businesses.
Some people say, look, the sly grog is now a huge problem, and really, it's now coming back into town, so these restrictions are ineffective or meaningless. What do you say to that?
Well, the restrictions will become ineffective where people are supporting the illegal sale of trafficking of alcohol and other drugs. And there are people who are in our community who are in leadership positions who are selling alcohol to people who are wanting it. And the restrictions, yes, they are being undermined. Some of these people may be saying the restrictions aren't working. Well, yes, because they're making sure that it doesn't work.
Jean Oscar is the CEO of the Maniwantikura Women's Resource Centre. It's a group of buildings in a small compound next door to the high school. Last year, June was awarded an Order of Australia for her work with the women and children of the region. The centre has also been instrumental in tackling fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, or FASD, and we'll talk about that on next week's Law Report. One of the buildings in the compound is the women's shelter.
G'day, Damien Carrick, ABC Radio. How are you going? What's your name?
My name's Denise Cottrell. I'm the team leader here at the women's shelter in Fitzroy Crossing.
Can you show me around?
Yeah, sure. Come on in.
Thank you. So we've kind of got an enclosed veranda, but we're now going through some pretty sort of solid doors, with glass panels, but
glass
solid.
Panels. Yeah.
Tell me, how many rooms do you have inside the shelter?
Okay, inside, so in here, this was the interviewing room.
Yep.
As you're coming down into the building, you have staff room, which then you'll come down into the open living area. This is actually the TV room, dining room, the kitchen.
And the kids' play area. So it's sort of a little fenced off area with some great big animals, dinosaurs, elephants.
And then now we'll go on out towards the back of the building where the clients would sit during the day. They'll come out here, they'll sit out here.
And I notice it's a courtyard, but it's surrounded by a very high, very solid wooden fence with metal posts and metal railings.
Yes.
How many people can come here?
We have two family rooms that can accommodate up to a mum with a large family group, and then we have another room which that takes on the single individuals.
Last night, for instance, how many people were here?
Well, last night we had one client. Our client had just come out of a very abusive situation and her partner was still quite intoxicated. We had quite a very angry partner wanting to get to his wife last night, and which is good. There's actually two fences before he can actually get inside to the shelter. So police were called and, yeah, they took him away, which was great. And we kept our client safe and protected here.
Have people ever broken in?
Years ago, I think, before this was quite sturdy place, I think there was one incident.
Do you find, I know that the sale of takeaway grog is now restricted in Fitzroy Crossing, but I understand there's a lot of sly grog, and if a car comes through, does that mean that you have a busy night?
Well, yeah, that's normally the way it goes. It's grandmothers bringing in their grandchildren. You've got quite big families here as well, so that sometimes late at night they're bringing in the extended families as well with them.
How many people will be here on a busy night?
Oh, look, we've had, you know, a house full. Christmas period was our biggest. We did have a house full over that period. There was something like 10 to 12 children plus adults, so I think there was roughly about 8 adults.
How long do people stay here for?
Oh, look, it depends up until their time of healing is complete. Normally 1 to 2 days, 5 days is the longest, but then you'll get a client that will remain here for a couple of weeks or more.
Because they've got nowhere safe to go, because their partner is still, I don't know, on a binge, angry.
Being such a small community, yeah, that's the only way. You know, there's no other options for them to return home to their communities or their house. So instead of creating a bigger problem, they'll remain here until it's really safe.
Are you involved in that process of trying to make sure that it's safe to go back on the outside?
We certainly do. We do a lot of safety planning with our clients in here. We make sure that they look around their environment, who's available, who's sober in the community, who can they go to, where can the children go is the main important thing as well. And there's no objects in their way for when they want to get away.
Do you find that many people, they come here and they need safety, but they don't necessarily want to report to police?
Yeah, we do, actually. You know, it's all up to them what they want to do, because we don't want to certainly make the matter worse for them when they return home.
Is there ever pressure from people not to report to police, from other family members? I mean, you might be giving them that advice and saying this is one of your options, but then other people, when they go back into their community, might say, no, don't do it.
Certainly, that's the biggest thing with the clients, that, you know, when they do return home, because they've actually moved out of their family group, they've gone to live within their partner's family group, so there's a lot of pressures upon that as well when they're going home. So it's all about, if the partner's incarcerated, they do get a lot of blame, but there needs to be accountability as well.
There are extraordinary issues, I guess, around alcohol, but also just about being a tiny little community where everybody knows each other.
We sure are, and there's nowhere to escape but here. This is the only place that they can feel protected.
We've been talking about the pressures on the women who come here for your help, but what about you in your position? Are you ever put under pressure or feel under pressure as a result of your role here at the shelter?
No, I'm not placed under that type of pressure, probably because I'm outspoken and I know that I can go to seek the police to come in and help. I'm here to do a job and I do my job well. I'm a strong woman.
Yeah, a lot of brave ladies around here. I feel very privileged to meet you all.
No, thank you for coming and having a look and seeing what it's like for us here in Fitzroy.
The shelter is facing the prospect of reduced state funding from February 2015. I'm Damien Carrick and you're here with me in Fitzroy Crossing, a town in the northwest of WA, the Kimberley region. At our website abc.net.au/rn, you can read more about Denise Cotterill. We have a link to a feature article by my colleague and travelling buddy Ben Collins, who's the ABC's Kimberley's cross-media reporter. Ben also took the photos, which are now up on the website. Next door to the shelter, in a very small building, is the office of the Family Violence Prevention Legal Service. It's here I find lawyer Fiona Mason.
There's few incidents that I've seen or the women have spoken about that hasn't involved alcohol-fuelled violence. And the violence is pretty brutal when it involves alcohol. So there's bottling and stabbing and weapons used, and yeah, it's vicious, with severe injuries, broken jaws, eye sockets, scarring. It's brutal, the level of violence here and the scope and extent of it.
Fiona Mason provides legal services to women and children escaping family violence, and she also works to prevent violence through community education. A big part of her role is organising violence restraining orders, which prevent perpetrators from approaching their victims. But many women don't report breaches of these orders.
Not always, and there are reasons why they don't. Often because we have the three-strike policy in Western Australia, which means three breaches, then the perpetrator can be imprisoned. Of course, that depends on the extent and the level of the breach. But often the women don't report it because they may be in fear of further violence. And there can be occasions where they have pressure from the perpetrator's family not to report a breach, which is unfortunate because often the perpetrators don't respect the breach and the women continue to live in fear of further violence.
It's a three strikes and you go to jail if you breach the intervention order three times. Have you seen many men jailed for those three breaches?
There are a lot of men in the Fitzroy Valley that have been imprisoned for those breaches, and when they come out, often the relationships will resume and there's pressure on the woman not to report violent incidents because the perpetrators, their partners, are often, they don't want to return to prison.
This is a small town. Everybody knows each other, and it's pretty hard to stay separate. I'm wondering, how effective can an intervention order be?
They're often very difficult for the woman to really be able to feel safe, even with a restraining order. As you said, it is a small town and there's lots of family connections. So I think just having a restraining order doesn't necessarily keep the woman safe, and I think they still live in fear.
What are some of the pressures on women?
There has been a high suicide rate in the Fitzroy Valley with young men and families concerned about the threat that perpetrators, if there's too much stress or breakup in the relationship or police involvement or the fact that they've been separated from their family, there's the threat of harm to themselves, and so therefore that family may put pressure on a woman not to report violence and or to return to the relationship.
Lawyer Fiona Mason. She tells me that legal intervention provides a space for women to make major decisions. One of her clients, Michelle, was in a violent relationship for a number of years. Her partner was repeatedly jailed for assault and breaching violence restraining orders. But with the support of a number of services, the partner's violence has stopped and the couple are now bringing up their child in a violence-free home. Another of Fiona Mason's clients is a young woman that we'll call Jane. She stayed in the Fitzroy Crossing Women's Shelter for 12 weeks, a record, before leaving for Broome. I caught up with her there.
Jane, we're sitting here at the rehab centre in Broome. I understand you're in a violent relationship with the father of your child. How long did that relationship last?
Very long time.
He went to jail because he was violent towards you, is that right?
Yep. Like, he's in prison, and when he's out of prison, he sometimes fights with me and back in prison again, up and down, yeah.
So it's happened over and over again?
Yep. Yeah.
How serious were the beatings? Were you ever hospitalised?
Yeah. This one here, it's from a knife.
A scar on your forehead, which is across, actually, the right-hand side of your forehead.
And this one, I got bitten and stabbed here.
On your right forearm?
Yeah.
I understand that a little while ago he came out of prison and the violence started again. And at that point you had a fight, is that right?
When he came out of prison, And then he started to drink and started fighting with me. And that's when that accident happened with my little boy.
And in that incident, your partner had tried to attack you, as I understand it. You tried to attack your partner in response to that, but he was carrying your child, and so your child got hit when you lunged at your partner with a bottle.
Yes. It was a full bottle. Yeah. I just smashed it up in his head, and all the glass went just flying around everywhere and then cut my little boy's face.
Did he sustain serious permanent injuries?
Yeah, he did.
Is he okay now?
Yep, he's okay. And we were both at the police station. We both got that charge, I think. Yeah.
And what happened to your husband then? Did he go to jail again for the violence around that event?
Yes.
And what about you? Did you go to jail as well?
No.
But your child was taken off you?
Yeah.
You came here instead to rehabilitation, didn't you? Yeah. How's that experience been? How long have you been here for?
I've been here 6 months now. Got 2 more weeks to go. And then back to Fitzroy again.
What happened to your child?
I did get him back from the DCP.
Department of Child Protection?
Yeah. And he's in my care again and just waiting to go back home, Fitzroy. So excited to go back. Been here 6 months now, doing all my programs, attending everything every day, doing counselling and all that. I think didn't crave for any grog since I've been here.
How old's your son now?
He's 2 years old.
Your partner, is he still in prison now for the events of that night?
No, he's back in Fitzroy. He just came out of prison.
Are you going to go back and be in a relationship with him again?
If he stops his drinking and things, yeah, might go back. I just really want him to stop drinking and doing all them wrong things, what he done to me in the past, and just stop and just live like real family. Yeah.
Do you feel safer somewhere like this than back at home?
Yeah. Back home, it's like other people come in with grogs and just, yeah, just make you want to drink. Yeah, but when I leave from here, my goal is just to stay away from grog, trying to get into TAFE and find a job and get my little boy to school like every day. That's my goal when I come out from here.
Thank you very much for sharing your story. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
That's Law Report Summer for this week. Thanks to producer Anita Barrow and also to audio engineer John Jacobs. And a very big thank you to Ben Collins, ABC Kimberley's cross-media reporter who accompanied me on my trip to Fitzroy Crossing. I'm Damien Carrick, and next week on the last of our special Kimberley series, we look at programs that try and keep Indigenous people off the criminal justice treadmill. Talk to you next week.